It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour. Hey everyone, I'm Maggie, and growing up, I played the bass clarinet, the only instrument appropriate for a budding, gender-confused lesbian who was already 5'9" in the 8th grade.
What is a bass clarinet?
Wait, you don't know what a bass clarinet is?
I am out of the loop on that gay agenda item.
So take like a tenor sax. Do you know what tenor saxophone is?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, have you ever seen really, like a really big saxophone?
Okay.
And then make it really skinny and long, and it goes all the way down to the ground, and it has a tiny little rod that it stands up on. So it's just like a hugely long clarinet with like a little tail that like pops up. It looks like it's just like a huge.
So that's your
dildo.
Ring of keys.
Was my own bass clarinet.
Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Mia, the hemp seed granola femme, here to steal your flannel.
Oh, she meant it.
Yeah. You were like, crunchy is not gay. Crunchy is gay.
Okay.
On this week's episode, we're starting off with a segment called Queers in History. We're talking grandma gay. After that, it's butch and femme week. We're talking about colloquial use of the words, their historical context, and presentation versus attitude. Finally, we're wrapping this episode up with a nice little bow like the binary gift box it is with killing the game. That's a joke. Butch and femme, like everything in the world, is not a binary. Thank you. And good night. Where's my LaCroix? Where's my LaCroix, Thomas? All right. You ready? Okay. So today we are introducing a new segment. Nearly every episode we introduce a new segment because this is a new podcast.
Keep it fresh.
So we're keeping it fresh, except we're not. We're making it old and dusty. This is Queers in History. So Queers in History is a mini segment where we share a little bit about some queers from history that you may not know about. That's basically it.
Mm-hmm. People that we've either just heard about or are totally feeling and are excited to share because we love geeking out about queer history because you don't read it anywhere else
and like,
besides on your own time.
Yeah, and like gay people have existed forever.
Forever.
Just sneakily.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. And in the case of who I'm talking about.
Ooh.
Let's get out and proud.
All right. I'm going to start. And so this person I actually wanted to talk about because hi mom, I know that you're listening. I talked about this with my mom recently on the phone and it was so much fun to talk about this little bit of Stonewall era history. And so I wanted to bring it to the podcast as well. This person is named Stormy DeLavier and Stormy was born in 1920. So Stormy was a butch lesbian. She's a biracial butch lesbian with a white father and a black mother. She was born in New Orleans and worked as an MC and a bouncer and a bodyguard and spent a lot of her life in living in Greenwich Village in New York City. She actually was a guardian of lesbians in the village. So she was a volunteer street patrol worker who worked to keep her own community safe, which I love, love, love. And she was a part of the Jewel Box Review, which was North America's first racially integrated drag review. One of the things that I love that I've heard about Stormy is that she has a relatively famous quote about the Stonewall riots. So for those of you who don't know, she was arrested on the night of the Stonewall riots in 1969. And many think that she kind of not instigated, but definitely started or kind of amped up the intensity of what followed later that night. She was arrested, and after she was put into the back, relatively roughly into the back of a police vehicle is when things kind of got started and people started to fight back against the police. And she's quoted with saying, "It was a rebellion, it was an uprising, and it was a civil rights disobedience. It wasn't a damn riot." which I love.
Amazing.
And so I wanted to just share a little bit about her. I think a lot of people don't know her name. She isn't really a household name the same way when we think of the Stonewall Riots. And I think she is such an important part of that legacy. And so there's a really cool, it's relatively short, it's about 20 minutes long, a YouTube video about her and just about her history called A Stormy Life. So I'll put it in the show notes on iTunes for this episode and on our website so you can take a look.
I think it's really interesting too that I think with Stonewall, like, people always are trying to find, like, these names to be, like, the leader of it. Mm-hmm. And I think what's really interesting is, like, the more people we hear about, the more we learn about it, the more it becomes evident that it's about, like, a community doing something, you know? We, like, want to have this, like, leader image. And I just think it's really cool to, like, to keep making dynamic the image that we have of the people, because it's so many different identities and so many different people who were, like, all together being like, fuck this.
And it wasn't a monolith either. You know, I think, you know, there are movies like that Stonewall whitewashed mess, which made you think it was all white gay men.
Yeah.
But even still, even if you have moved past that hot mess of a rewriting, even still, this wasn't a monolith of identity. It wasn't all, you know, people who were presenting in one way or looking one way. It was really a family. And so I think that's so cool.
Yeah, it's so cool.
To talk about it. So Mia, who do you have for queer history?
So the first person that I want to talk about is also New York centric. So Mae Cowdery is a poet who was actually born in Philly. And she's considered to be like a Harlem Renaissance poet, but it's actually pretty tragic. So she was born in 1909. To give some context, I looked up like Langston Hughes' birth year. He was born like 10 years earlier, 7 or 8 years earlier. So she was like kind of considered late for the Harlem Renaissance. And also because she was born in Philly, she was kind of out of the loop.
Oh, wow.
But she's like this unbelievably brilliant poet. Now, I took an African-American lit class at Mount Holyoke. I actually took two different semesters. And the second semester focused on the Harlem Renaissance in particular with Professor Gail Pemberton, the most brilliant professor. Read her book. But anyway, so I became obsessed with this, with women's poetry of the Harlem Renaissance, because often in classes of African-American lit, and particularly Harlem Renaissance, you read a lot of women's prose and men's poetry. And I was kind of like, what the hell? You know, there's this gap, and it's obviously not just randomly missing. So I actually ended up doing an independent study on women poets of the Harlem Renaissance with this professor. And Mae Cowdery was my favorite poet. Is still my favorite poet in general, but was my favorite poet that I discovered from doing research with Gail and just learning about it. Because it's out there and it exists. Basically, like, the women poets of the time were writing using a lot of, like, British Romanticism poetic techniques. So, like, often, like, invoking a muse or, like, using metered writing or particular language in a way that a lot of the editors of the time, who were often men, were saying, like, this is not the militant, like, racial conscious writing that we need right now to be representative of, like, Black writing. So a lot of their poems didn't get circulated. But actually, they were using, like, these British Romantic techniques to often write lesbian love poetry, because everybody in the Harlem Renaissance was gay. So, like, what's more subversive than using, like, super fucking pretentious, like, poetic techniques of England to talk about loving Black women as a Black woman?
That's awesome.
It's absolutely beautiful.
I had no idea about any of this.
And Gail Pemberton went to a library in New York City, because you can't really buy Mae Cowdery's book. She has a book, but you can't really buy it. So
wait, why not?
It's just not, like, published. Like, there's not, like, published copies of it.
Wow.
So Gail photocopied her entire book for me. So I have it. You can find her poems, or because her poems were released in, like, Crisis and, like, these other, like, magazines of the Harlem Renaissance. But she didn't, nobody really compiled her work until, like, many, many years later. And I'm forgetting the name of her book now, but I'll post about it on our Instagram and we can put it in the liner notes on iTunes. But you can read her poems, but I wanted to share one here on the podcast. So this is my favorite poem. It's called Dusk. Like you, letting down your purple-shadowed hair to hide the rose and gold of your loveliness, and your eyes peeping through like beacon lights in the gathering darkness. So that's my favorite poem, short and sweet and sensual AF. and tragically, Mae Cowdery ended up committing suicide when she was, I think, in her 30s, maybe 40s.
Right.
but her poetry is just absolutely so moving and so beautiful. And
did she have, is she known for having like one particular muse or like any kind of like famous lover, unrequited love?
She got down with a lot of the like women of the Harlem Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
But because she was so young, there wasn't that much known about her romantic relationships. But like, right. It's very, very evident from her poetry that they're all very sensual, very yeah. romantic, sometimes sexual poems about
sometimes
women.
Sometimes sapphic, if you will.
Yes. Hello, Sappho. So that's the first person that I wanted to talk about. And yeah. then the second people mm-hmm. that I want to talk about is Vita Sackville West. She was an English poet, novelist, and garden designer. She's kind of well known.
Wait, garden designer?
Yes, garden designer.
That is very good.
Yeah. She's sometimes known because she had an affair with Virginia Woolf.
Mm-hmm.
But way before that, she had an affair with a woman named Violet Keppel, who was an English socialite and author. So, like, really different, but similar time period. And they were so in love. They were, like, teenagers when they started their love affair.
Oh, my
and
God.
And they're both writers. And actually, Virginia Woolf's book, Orlando, mm-hmm. is kind of inspired by Vita's, like, family history.
Orlando? Correct. Isn't that one that's kind of gender-bendy?
Yes.
Do I have
like,
that right?
It's, like, feminist canon. It's, yes. It's about a poet that, like, lives for centuries and changes gender and has all these relationships. And
oh, yes.
It's one of my mom's favorite books.
So I need to hop need on to read it, it, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's amazing. But so it's kind of about Vita's family history and her relationship with Violet.
Mm-hmm.
So they began their affair when they were teenagers, but they both ended up marrying men. But Vita's husband was also loving dudes. So they had an open marriage.
Wow.
And in 1918, okay? Like, wow. Y'all think you're cool with your non-monogamy in 2018, but like a century ago, these bitches were doing it. And
queer people have been around
doing it. Violet and Vita had a lesbian oath of fidelity, which is Maggie and I's next tattoo that we're gonna get.
I cannot wait.
And you can also purchase a book of their absolutely stunning love letters. But I also wanted to read an excerpt from that.
Please.
So everyone's just gonna get used to me reading on the air, I guess. So this is a letter from Violet to Vita when she was 16.
Oh.
I want to see you. I want to hear your voice. I want to put my hand on your shoulder and cry my heart out. I have never told you the whole truth. You shall have it now. I have loved you all my life, a long time without knowing, 5 years knowing it as irrevocably as I know it now. Loved you as my ideal. So, as it turns
loved
out...
Loved you as my ideal.
Yeah.
Right?
So... it turns out that queers in history were just as codependent and sentimental as we are a century later. So there we are.
It's clearly written by a 16-year-old.
Right.
Like, how...
And it was originally written in French. This is translated, too.
Like, that feeling of being, like, of being 16 and feeling taboo love and just feeling like you're going to rip your heart out
like,
of your face.
Like, reading that feels like when you sprint and your heart is just, like, pounding out of your chest. But, like, you feel amazing, too.
Oh, my God.
Like, you're not tired. You're, like, just adrenaline. Like, it's so, so touching.
It's so sweet,
it's
too.
It's heartbreaking because it's so beautiful.
So the thing about the May Cowdery poem, too, is that it is so, like, so if she died when she was in her 30s, right? Like, she was writing and doing so much of her work. How old we are right now.
Yeah.
And, like, imagining, like, just even just, like, listening to her voice and listening to that voice as a 16-year-old and thinking of what I felt like when I was 16 and having that relatability of being, like, you know, like, it's... There's such a visceralness to, right. like, listening to other
tapping
queer women.
Into that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Wow, thank you for sharing.
Yes, ooh. Absolutely.
Wow, so that was Queers in History.
Getting tender.
Yeah. For this main brew, we are talking about butch and femme identifiers. We have dropped them pretty casually about 600 times so far on this new podcast. So we thought we'd actually get into it a little bit. And I think Queers in History was probably a good way to get started because butch and femme obviously have some pretty serious historical significance. So I think we should start a little bit with kind of just why we chose butch and femme identifiers as a topic. And I think in particular, one of the things that I wanted to bring up was that, you know, there is definitely a very strong queer woman and lesbian in general online community, particularly on Twitter. And I think one thing that I have been seeing, and I know others have seen recently, is a lot of relatively heated discussions about the ability to use the term butch and femme, and if it is specifically reserved for lesbians, what that means, who's allowed to use them, when they're allowed to use them. And so I think that is kind of some of the relevance of why we wanted to talk about it, is that people have a lot of feelings about it, as do we. But
yes, we talk about butch and femme, and you know, I think we use the words kind of loosely nowadays. Not loosely, but that butch can look like a lot more than it used to.
Mm-hmm.
Look like,
yes.
Nothing's satisfying me about the way I'm going to talk about this. But basically, I wanted to kind of investigate the ways that butch and femme have a lot to do with gender when we talk about queer womanhood.
Mm-hmm.
But otter and twink and bear don't necessarily imply anything about gender when we talk about men.
Oh, that is a really interesting place to start. I love that you brought that up. I do, because it also, I think it's a good way to tie in a little bit of butch and femme history.
Yes.
Because, so granted, I know much of my knowledge about butch and femme as signifiers come from lesbian history of like the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that there are a lot of other ways that these words have been used that I don't know about quite as well. But I do know that one of the things that is that butch and femme I feel like are kind of known for is working in relation to each other.
Yes.
They didn't come up out of nowhere. So a lot
And I think that's kind of what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yes. Exactly. And so they did have a much more serious gender designation. I mean, like, we've both read Stone Butch Blues.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that, like, even just as that one literary example, that there is, like, Mia just shed one tear.
Yes. Just like thinking about like denim and sadness.
That there is, you know, there's they worked in relation to each other, and they had to do a lot with presentation, but also there was kind of a strict, whether or not how enforced it was, there definitely were expectations around sexual roles, the idea of aggressiveness and pursuing and who was pursuing whom,
And social behavior.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And absolutely. I feel like there are bear bars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, you know, we talk about how much we love to see butch couples.
Mm-hmm.
Just Maggie and I generally just talk about that. But like, it's not a thing that's like lacking in representation, I feel like, in gay communities to see two bears.
That's interesting. I guess that's true. I haven't really thought about that. Yeah.
But like, it's really common for two twinks to date each other. There's not the same need for relation to one another, you know? And it's funny because, like, I feel like it's a thing that gay people often relate about, like, whether they're gay men, gay women, whatever, wherever they happen to identify gender and sexuality-wise, of like, oh yeah, when straight people are like, oh, who's the man and who's the woman? You know, it's kind of this, like, we can commiserate about, like, straight people trying to project heteronormativity.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like people expect it more from lesbians by applying butch and femme as these gender roles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, butches and femmes, necessarily.
Right. I know that... I mean, there are lots of gay men who use butch and femme in their relationships too, for sure. But I think one of the things I've always thought about is quite literally just about gender presentation, because hair is a big deal.
Yes.
It's like a very big deal. And as much as we love to say that, like, butch isn't a haircut, butch isn't just having short hair, butch is not just having short hair, etc., it's like there is something to be said about the fact that, like, there's a visibility to, like, having somebody who presents very, very femme and very, very butch in women. And as much as, like, I think that, like male femininity is in many ways very much stigmatized and has, like, bears, like, a very particular weight in society and is, like, is stigmatized in a way that I don't know if it's the same with, I think.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking about, like, when you have, like, a very specifically, like, butch femme lesbian relationship, there's a lot of very visible physical difference. And it's not that men never have that, but, like, typically we still think of, like, even if we're thinking of media representation, we're thinking of two men with short hair. We're thinking of two men who still, like, because the idea of, like, someone who identifies as a man at all or, like, does not identify as a woman who wears a dress is, like, that becomes a thing. Whereas, like, with women, the idea of wearing pants or dressing, like, anywhere on the spectrum of dressing butch is, like, so, in many ways, it's not taken as big of a deal. Mm-hmm. It's not as visible, but it also is, like, in the context of a relationship, it's very visible. Because then if you're just thinking about gay men and lesbians, you're thinking of, like, two men versus, like, a butch and a femme,
right,
you know?
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, it's, yes, like a, yeah.
No, absolutely. Totally. So I want to talk about how we use it casually and kind of jokingly in, mm-hmm, that, in response to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was thinking about how important these are, mm-hmm, for some people. And, mm-hmm, for me, so I guess maybe let's take it personal now. Mm-hmm. For me, I have been described mostly as a hard femme.
Mm-hmm. By whom?
People at school.
Okay.
On the playground. other lesbians. Other, okay, queer people, mostly. Okay. Most people, I think, like at Mount Holyoke or people in my program now, have referred to me as femme.
Mm-hmm.
People who are queer themselves have called me hard femme.
Mm-hmm.
I like being called hard femme because I'm very tender and wimpy in general. So I'm into that. Also, I think it basically just means you have a septum piercing and tattoos and have dyed your hair.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on that.
Which is so interesting because when I learned what hard femme meant, I had assumed that it was like super long red nails and like Vita Dantes. Kind of what, yeah. Is that your name? Vita Font? Vita
Dantes?
Dita Von T's. Yes. I assume that it was like hard femme like that. Kind of,
I mean,
like pin-up-y.
That's kind of what I think of.
Yeah.
Which
you totally rock sometimes, but also sometimes you do like total grunge, like.
I like to describe myself as a grimy femme.
A grimy femme? What, like, that's, dirty? Just like.
Yeah. Like, you know, does some femme shit sometimes, but like isn't really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think of hard as like kind of what you're describing. Like, these, like, fucking sharp-ass cat-eye wings, mm-hmm, and, like,
mm-hmm,
leather jacket all the time. Sometimes I wear corduroy. Sometimes I wear cotton, you know? I think that butch and femme identifiers really come down to fabrics.
That's it. Fabrics.
It. Textiles.
Well, then my next question is relevant. I was going to ask you how you feel attitude-wise.
Yes.
Because we jokingly talked about butch-tude,
yes,
a couple weeks ago or a couple episodes ago. And I was curious kind of how you feel about, I mean, we can talk about attitude and historical notions, yeah, and whatever, but how do you feel attitude-wise?
All right, so I feel like personality, I'm like kind of a soft butch.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
To me, that means that I don't know. I guess it feels right. It's one of those like identities that just kind of feels like something.
So, like, for you, I mean, like, obviously in the historical context, particularly in, like, the 40s and 50s, butch had to do with sexual roles and being an aggressor, being a pursuer, being, yeah, being a top for a lot of different ways that translates in bed, but...
You want to be on top.
Yeah, like Tyra.
Like
the original, like, Stone Butch,
yeah,
Blues.
Yeah. Tyra Banks is the ghostwriter of Stone Butch Blues. You heard it here first. Yeah, I think that definitely I'm very direct, especially, mm-hmm, when I am flirting with someone, when I am making moves on, mm-hmm, someone. But I think that it's always kind of with a grain of glitter that I say these things,
mm-hmm,
rather than a grain of salt, because it's like not to be taken too seriously and kind of to be taken as a joke.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll say, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm grimy femme. But, like, that doesn't actually mean that much to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, how I physically present changes day to day, literally based on the weather, based on what I'm feeling, based on what, right, I'm wearing, based on what I want to do.
Well, then here's a question. Are there things that you could wear or positions, not sexual positions, lol, but are there, like, positions within a, like, romantic or sexual encounter where you would feel uncomfortable, where you'd be like, this is not my gig, you know, like, this isn't my look, this isn't my vibe, this isn't what I do?
I don't know. I'm not really uncomfortable, but I do notice that when I dress more masculine, if I'm dating a dude, often... they'll be a little bit not like uncomfortable, but they'll often say something like, oh, you're dressed like such a tomboy today or something like that, which doesn't like bother me.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of like, yeah, these are my clothes. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to wear these. Mm-hmm. But I did have a guy on Tinder in the fall message me about how he usually dated girls who dress kind of butch. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, is this supposed to make me think that you're less like of a piece of shit? I don't like, what is that supposed to,
right?
I'm supposed to let my guard down now and like suddenly this everything's cool even though you're just like some other dude, right? Like, you know, I don't know what his goal right. was.
Also
was,
what
like,
does that mean?
Why are you using that word?
Right,
like, yeah. That was a moment where I felt like I needed to gatekeep a little bit. Yeah, of being like, do you even know what you're saying? There, like, we were trying to put words to this recently. Mm-hmm. Of like, okay, but these words do have meaning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, you know? I think it becomes like they've definitely, like, in second wave feminism, particularly in the 70s and 80s, there was a big push against butch femme and mm-hmm. butch femme politics. And they said, well, this is just recreating patriarchy and it's recreating misogyny in our communities, which, yes, like, are there parts of like even the traditional forms of butchness that absolutely perpetuated those things? Sure. But at the same time, butch and femme were community markers that grew in and around each other, in which communities of women or like AFAB people supported each other. And so I think, so there was this whole movement in the 70s and 80s where people said like, that's messed up. And it very much was classist. Like, you had a lot of like middle and upper middle class college educated women and lesbians who were saying like, that's not what we do. That's mm-hmm. like of the past. Like, everybody's just androgynous now. Like, we all just have like,
right.
you know, we're all just kind of studious looking and we have short hair and like, we just reject the whole thing. And so I think now when you see people like kind of not taking this, like the seriousness of butch and femme yeah. as words, I think it does a disservice to the whole thing. It's like, how is this not just recreating that same attitude of right, calling it a, you know, it's low class to gender yourself that way.
Like, and I think that this is something that is really frustrating for me, is that like a lot of times some of the most insidious homophobia that I come into contact with is from other queer people.
How so?
Like in policing, mm-hmm. how people are allowed to identify it.
That's another question. When straight people identify you're saying that you don't really like it when straight people identify you as butch or use that term with you. Do you mind when straight yeah. people identify you as femme?
I don't think they do that much. You because don't. I think their assumption is that I'm femme unless I'm butch. Does that make sense?
Interesting. Because yeah.
when I'm presenting as femme, I'm just being a girl.
Right. Right, right, right.
When I present as butch, I'm doing something different.
Interesting.
I'm doing something other.
Yeah. That is interesting.
So, Maggie, what about you?
What about me? Well, so which I think I've said before on an episode previously, I was a very hyper femme high schooler, which I don't even think I would call it femme. I would. I was a very hyper femme high schooler. And I identified as pretty much as soon as I came out, I started identifying as femme. And I didn't just say like, oh, I identify as queer. Like, I identified as a femme queer woman. It was like a whole thing. I liked little things that kind of made me look gay. I actually, one of my favorite things mm-hmm. ever was when I went through a long period where I had kind of like a messy bob and was just like rocking whatever felt like it was a good time in the moment, which like a lot of the times was like mostly men's clothing, and at other points was like very much dresses and heels. And I loved it because I loved the idea. I loved the feeling of other queer people seeing me, but yes. straight people not seeing me.
Yes.
Those were always like my favorite moments where like I would be seen by other queer people and I would be like, just like, it was like, you know, that energy was so queer,
wow.
but not enough for like, you know, my mm-hmm. aunts and uncles to know.
Yes.
Whatever.
No, I love it. Like, I still feel like I feel that when I'm like shopping in the men's section.
Yes. It's also, sometimes I think it can be such an energy thing. And I don't mean that to, mm-hmm. as somebody who got femme invisibilized a ton, I also, and as someone who that no longer ever happens to, I don't want to diminish how icky that is. But I think sometimes there is an energy that comes across to queerness, which is so fun. And I don't really know how to explain it other than that. But like the just the being able to see each other thing, I think is mm-hmm. can be so cool.
Yes.
But yeah, so I, I cut my hair off. I got a short haircut when I was in school and then kept going. I just kept buzzing it.
Shorter and shorter.
Like you do. It just feels so good to buzz your hair. There's nothing that feels cleaner than like just getting all the hair off your back of your neck. It just is so
Maggie
satisfying.
Maggie has now shaved off 3 centimeters of her skull, actually.
I don't need my skin.
It's just thinner and thinner and thinner.
I'm getting to my brain. I don't need it. But I really, I went through a period, I went through a period where I was like very, I was really getting into butchness, like pretty aggressively, and was like kind of confused more about my gender identity and kind of how I felt about a lot of different things. And one of the things that was the hardest during that time period was that, so I was with my partner of many years at this point. And she identifies as butch, sort of, you know, but so she's just very masculine and always has been. And it's like very short, gets read as a young boy a lot, like doesn't often get read as a man, but very regularly gets misgendered. But has a very, just has a super sweet demeanor. And so anyways, but I had a hard time because like she was the aggressor of our relationship. Aggressor is a strong word. She was the pursuer of our relationship. She was like the person who like took control. That's just how we've always worked. And like, it's funny because like she jokingly calls herself a sissy butch all mm-hmm. the time because she like is scared of spiders and she's scared of everything. And I have to open all of the jars and I have to do so much of the stuff. And I like fix her car sometimes. And it's like, so fun, right. Kind of.
To, like, have watched you and her, like, evolve and mm-hmm. to, like, you know, have seen, like we have been friends and so much of our friendship has centered around this portion of our lives where our queerness has really become so important to us and something mm-hmm. that we've kind of explored, which is really exciting. And so it's been really interesting and cool for me as your friend. And it's kind of like, you know, I think I've dated a lot of cis men and, mm-hmm. and so the more that I, you know, date people who are not cis men and date just, I don't know, other people, mm-hmm. And the more that I kind of become comfortable in my queer identity, it's really nice to me to kind of break that open. Mm-hmm. And I feel like your and Nancy's relationship is really special to me because I'm like, yeah. Fuck yeah. Like, it's not, you know, mm-hmm. because I think, like, first of all, it's just internalized homophobia, but it's also, like, once you get over that, then you're kind of in this, like, internalized, like, just, like, heteronormativity that you, mm-hmm. like, it's so insidious. Like, you keep having to check yourself and keep having mm-hmm. to, like, rethink that and, mm-hmm. like, those roles, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up with a single mom who did everything, mm-hmm. you know? And my dad is, like, he's a very masculine-looking man, very masculine-presenting man, but like, my dad wore eyeliner, mm-hmm. you know, like, forever. My dad had long hair most of my childhood. Like, my dad wanted to be, like, a rock star, and mm-hmm. in many ways was. And my mom was, like, always this, like, punk badass. Mm-hmm. My mom used to literally do push-ups to the Rocky theme song.
Amazing.
And my mom and my stepdad raised his 2 sons alone as a single dad. And so they both kind of had to, like, be more androgynous in their roles as parents. And that mm-hmm. was, like, a really interesting model to see growing up. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of contributed to, like, for me, I had to, like, rather than unlearn the dichotomy of butch and femme that kind of is projected onto queer people and queer relationships of, like, okay, which one am I going to be? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously I had to learn the terminology, but I kind of had to unlearn that because my mom was always this kind of just, like, badass androgynous, like, mm-hmm. like, her womanhood was one with her ability to fix the car mm-hmm. and to repaint that garage and to fix the roof and mm-hmm. to, you know what I mean? Like, all the stuff that we associate as being, like, masculine labor or masculine mm-hmm. energy, you know? Like, my mom didn't take anybody's shit, but she never went a day without wearing lipstick, mm-hmm. you know? So it's, like, presentation mm-hmm. and attitude in this, we're kind of, like, one and the same. And mm-hmm. and I kind of grew up in an atmosphere of challenging that constantly.
I think about when I was in high school and I was a water polo player and I was a swimmer. I was a very serious athlete and was, like, you know, I think there was a lot of internalized misogyny that went into this, but I was also one of those kids who was like, oh, well, I'm just like one of the guys, you know, like mm-hmm. I get along with guys, I'm one of the guys, whatever. And, but was like, I had super, super long blonde hair and I wore like a pink prom dress and I like was super, I just did all of it, you know?
Yeah.
But I was like, so, you know, I think of like my own attitude and my own toughness and my own kind of like, I'm going to fucking protect myself, you know, mm-hmm. like I'm like going to do whatever it fucking takes to protect myself. Like, and how that to me, like it worked in the time that I was femme, it worked to do that. And like now it works to do this. And I don't know what it's going to, I often joke that my one legacy that I feel like I deserve as a gay woman is to be a 50-year-old who wears cargo shorts and Tevas with a wife who also wears cargo shorts and yes. Tevas, and we just blend into the same person who only shares Life is Good t-shirts. But
I want Life is Good t-shirts. That's how I know you made it. Well, I actually would like to talk about, so like we've talked about how like butch is not a haircut, femme yes. is not long hair, femme is not lipstick, femme is yes. not dresses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
But we've also identified these things as kind of markers.
Yes.
I feel like there's kind of a catch 22 of like, sometimes I'm feeling more butch, so I dress more butch, but also sometimes I just wear more butch clothes and mm-hmm. then do I feel that way? Like sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Something I want to bring up is voices. I recently read an article that was about how this mom was writing about naming her child. They were talking about how like they wanted to give their kid a strong name mm-hmm. because they felt like when you have a name that you have to correct people on the pronunciation, or you have to, you know, other people aren't going to have that name or whatever. Like it, like your character develops as you protect that name, or mm-hmm. as you know, like you're going to have this unique name because you are going to be like a strong and unique person.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was growing up, there were no other kids in my class named Mia. I was only Mia that I knew until high school mm-hmm. or college, actually.
Yeah.
And then I met like three, but I, you know, always had this like kind of different name and growing up always had a deeper voice. Mm-hmm. And I think now my voice isn't as deep, but when I was like six, I got my tonsils out. My voice dropped. Like my voice mm-hmm. became way, way deeper. And my voice has always kind of been a little bit raspier.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's very sexy to the listeners. I also think I've had a cold for the past 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think that also part of it too is I have this kind of confidence because I've had to like defend myself to like stupid boys on the playground constantly saying that I sound like a boy.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm kind of like, you know what? Fuck you. Yeah, my voice is deeper than yours.
Yeah.
And I think that my voice is something that makes me feel kind of visible in a queer way sometimes.
That's so interesting. That is so interesting. It's
even
actually,
though I hate the sound of my own voice because I'm a human and we all do. You know, knowing that other people hear my voice in a certain way kind of makes me feel mm-hmm. a little bit seen.
Mm-hmm. For me, I think about my own voice, and like I have a relatively high voice. I have very feminine mannerisms. Like I sit and behave and talk with my hands and carry my face and express myself in just like a very, you know, whatever the hell is like coded as a feminine way. Like that's very much how I present and always have. And I remember when I started dressing a lot more butch, being like, do I have to get rid of this? Like, or mm-hmm. what am I supposed to do? And like, I can, it's not like I've definitely like played with my behaviors before. And it's like, you know, I've been gendered in a lot of different ways in public many, many times, like sometimes good and sometimes scary, but like, I don't know. I think about like in queer communities, I'm very much read as queer, and in straight communities, I'm very much read as queer. You know, there's like a lot of privilege that comes with that of never having to really explain myself. There's a lot of
danger
that comes with that. There's a lot of like what it means to navigate queer spaces and like being respectful of how much space I'm taking up. But I think also I hate it when straight people don't read, I feel like queer people, like, I don't even read my own gender, right? But, like, I feel like with queer people, like, I'm in a space where, like, we can work it out together. And I'm like, okay, you're seeing, like, more of me that I feel like I'm trying to express. And when straight people write me off as just, like, having a short haircut, I'm like, Okay, no, you don't fucking get it, though. Like, that's not right. what it is. Like, it's not just a short haircut. Or then, but when straight people write me off as just butch, they're like, oh, like, you're just butch. And then they're surprised that my girlfriend isn't really femme. I'm like, well, fuck you. You don't understand anything. I'm not like that at all. Like, it's right. like very, you know, it's like, I'm never going to get it right. So there's a part of me which is like, I can't really assume anyone else is going to, but I'm like, okay, but you are way wrong. Like, mm-hmm. yes, I have a high voice. And like, yes, I talk, but like, it's like a gay man thing, you know? It's not like a woman thing. Get
right.
with it.
Right. I am David Bowie.
So one of the things that I was thinking about in regards to clothing was, and I think you said this already, is that your clothes change every day. Like, it's cold, it's hot, you have things to do, you have to go to work, whatever. But sometimes there's this like underlying theme for some people and some for not on how you present and how it reflects your gender identity. And so like, what is that for you? Are there days where you're just like, I know I have days where I'm like, this is just fucking wrong, but none of my other clothes are clean and I can't get it right today. And so I'm just gonna like, I literally just pretend like I don't know myself. Like mm-hmm. I try to like not look in the mirror when I go wow. to the bathroom because I'm like, I can't think about the fact that this is how I'm looking today.
Yeah. Like, I think that sometimes we shy away from talking about how important the clothes that we wear mm-hmm. are to us because it can seem kind of superficial or classist or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just say, I bought a pair of amazing, I'm calling them dad jeans. You're familiar mm-hmm. with mom jeans. These mm-hmm. are dad jeans,
mm-hmm.
From Savers for $3 the yes. other day. So, you know, like, I just want to put that note out there mm-hmm. that I think oftentimes there's a lot of class stuff now. Like, we were talking about class with butch and femme before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also sometimes it's really expensive to look gay. So
Doc
so,
Martens.
Like, that's a
leather.
Thing. Like,
leather.
I don't have money for that.
Like
so for me, I definitely would say that I tend to go through phases. Mm-hmm. I also tend to dress less femme in the colder months.
Yes.
But also, I remember, not right when I came out, but I remember being in college and feeling weird about and feeling shameful about not fitting neatly
mm.
in a lot of ways, I think.
Mm-hmm. Like fitting neatly into a category?
Into
mean?
A category yeah. as in a category for sexuality,
mm-hmm.
a category for butcher femme presentation. Yeah, I remember feeling a lot of shame about that. And actually, so like, I feel like we've been talking about Hayley Kiyoko a lot, but I
well,
do really love Hayley Kiyoko.
When lesbian
and I,
Jesus
I
calls.
I love hot lesbians making pop music. but actually, Hayley Kiyoko, like, I wish that I had seen Hayley Kiyoko 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And not just in Lemonade Mouth. But
she really is your look.
She really is kind
she
of my
really
look.
She really is your
you
look.
Know? Like, there's this kind of like, it's not quite androgynous.
Mm-hmm.
It's just both butch and femme at the same time.
Mm-hmm. It's the clothes themselves have a tude.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's something that's like really nice for me to see. And I think maybe what I want to say is actually that I don't feel like a soft butch or a hard femme or even necessarily a grimy femme.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like butch and femme at the same time a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
A bem.
A futch.
I feel like a futch.
Futch is a word, though,
futch
isn't
is
it? People
thing.
People are saying futch these days.
Yeah, people.
Well,
so,
you've seen all those continuums, which are like butch to femme, and then the middle is futch. And it's like, so for example, there's like a Mulan one, and it's like Mulan and all of the different
yes.
gender presentations that she has throughout
yes,
the movie. Or
it's
like
amazing.
It's like one character, which is so real.
Which is so cool.
So relatable.
So relatable, yeah.
One of the things that I have a lot of complicated feelings about is how a lot of queer women's style is borrowed very much by straight women these days. And
yes.
like a lot of...
Difficult to...
Yes.
To navigate.
To navigate and to differentiate. Because a lot of things that did used to be identifiers for queer women are now like a lot of straight women are doing. And it's like, I want you to feel happy, but also like...
Give us back our denim cutoffs.
Thank you. Bye. Why are you wearing a denim vest? Do you really need to
Do
wear a
you
denim
need
vest?
That?
Like, okay, but what does it, you know, when a guy that you are talking to on Tinder says, oh, well, I like to date women who look butch, it's like, okay, but are you actually hooking up with queer butch women? Or are you hooking up with women who, like, occasionally wear L.L. Bean flannels and side braids? Because, like,
right.
what?
Right.
That's not butch.
Right.
Like, use the words correctly and get them out of your mouth.
Right. And I feel like a lot of, like, LA style mm-hmm. is, like, beanies and white t-shirts and leather jackets and, like...
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think it is a complicated thing because, like, it's like we said earlier, like, we're not trying to fucking be gatekeepers. We're not trying to say mm-hmm. you can never dress in a way that's more masculine because whether you enjoy having sex with queer people or not, you can, like...
You deserve the right to look how you want to look.
Women get to experience masculinity whenever the fuck they want to as well.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's right. a powerful thing and a fun thing and a good thing that people should be able to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's a particular powerful aspect of visibility in queer mm-hmm. communities that's the way that you dress is a tool of.
Mm-hmm. And I think it also factors in, again, to the words butch and femme, because I think that queer women of many, many gender presentations and backgrounds and, like, experiences across spectrums have every right to use words like butch and femme, but I don't think that straight women have the right to call themselves femmes. If you actively identify as straight, I don't think you get to say that. I don't care. You just... Okay, so you look feminine, but femme means something.
Femme is different than feminine.
Yeah, absolutely. It yeah. totally means something.
And butch is different than masculine, which is something that I wish a lot of B-docs at Mount Holyoke knew before they came stomping on my campus with that toxic masculinity running around in their bro tanks, okay?
And before this total convergence happened where people said, like, oh, if you look masculine, you're butch, and if you look masculine, then, like, you're going to be a B-doc, you're going to have that attitude where it's like, there are many people who do not dress or present that way who have more toxic masculinity
yes.
than people who are yes. with buzzed hair.
And like, I think we've been kind of differentiating between appearance and attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what's important to get at here is behavior.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so when you asked me earlier, like, do I feel like I, like, what mm-hmm. makes me feel like I sometimes act like a soft butch? And, like, I think that's about my behavior. Trying to think about it, I'm like, because every word that I started to think about were, like, these words that were binary affirming or stereotypical of masculinity. When, like, mm-hmm. this, it's not really necessarily about masculinity, it's just that... Like, the behaviors that I'm talking about, because I kept thinking of things like, oh, well, like, you know, I'm often the pursuer in a relationship or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then being like, wait, I want to push back on the idea that that's not a femme thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, sure, it can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think that, like, the meaning of words, especially things that are identifiers, is really dynamic and it changes per person and changes per person per minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that it's really important to consider that, like, it's so three-dimensional and dynamic and it's not static. And mm-hmm. even with it, when it is, like, when you have an identity that's static for you, that identity doesn't, while it may not change, it's constantly layered with meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, we've kind of played around with this topic. But I think... I would love to hear from our audience.
Yes, please.
I think I'd love to hear from our audience, like, how you guys identify, mm-hmm. You know, how your identities may have changed. We would love to hear messages on our website, thebitchinghour.org, mm-hmm. DMs on Instagram.
At Bitching Hour Podcast.
Yeah, on Twitter, at Bitching Hour Pod.
Mm-hmm.
You can also comment on our iTunes. But I think this is a topic that, you know, we are only two people and our mm-hmm. experiences only are what they are. So I think yes. that, you know, this is a topic that, this is an episode that I really feel like I would love to have people start conversations with their queer friends about their yes. identifiers.
Yes. I agree. I definitely
because it can be fun. There is nothing I love more in this world than a long-haired butch.
I do love a good long hair.
And that's all I'm gonna say.
So, to close it out, we are gonna play a little round of Killing the Game.
So, just a reminder, Killing the Game is a space for us to talk about our accomplishments. We think people need to get used to hearing women and queer people talking about their successes. So, this past week, mm-hmm. An accomplishment of mine. So my nursing school semester is kind of winding down, and I finished my medical surgical clinical two.
What is medical surgical for people who don't know?
So med surg just means you're basically on like a general floor. It's mm-hmm. not like a specialty floor. So I happen to be on a cardiothoracic surgical floor. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of, it was mostly surgical patients. So they had surgery, were going to have surgery, needed surgery, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of open heart surgery recovery, a lot of people with valve replacements. Mm.
Did you ever get to meet any surgeons?
Oh yeah, I went to the OR. I watched open heart surgery on Valentine's Day, which was
so romantic.
The best Valentine's Day I've ever had. Yeah, the surgeons are pretty nice. Some of them like allow you to talk and ask questions and hang out, and some of them are like looser, and some of them like you're not supposed to talk. Some of them like don't want students in their ORs and stuff. Which I mean, if I'm like operating on someone's chest, cracking their chest open and
I'd never want
stopping
that.
Their heart, I might not want a fucking nursing student like me like, "Hey, where's all the blood?" So that's a thing.
Let's bypass.
Yeah, exactly. Bypass is crazy. So med-surg clinical, is a rotation you do where you go in and take care of people and learn. So I was on a cardiothoracic surgical unit, but we had a lot of other kinds of surgical patients as well. It was a really fun clinical, but it was intense, and I was waking up at like 5 a.m. to go there.
Ooh.
So that finished. So now I have a lot of free time for the next month or so.
Bread.
So that's very exciting. Gonna bake a lot of bread. Gonna read a lot of books. I'm excited about that. And it feels good to kind of not fail out of my second semester.
Yeah.
Like, I at this point, I think it would be pretty hard for me to fail.
Yes.
Which is a good feeling.
You're gonna be a nurse.
I'm gonna be a nurse. Well, I'm halfway to being a nurse.
You're almost halfway to being a nurse.
Haven't failed yet.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
When is your other clinical done? Mia's also in a psych clinical.
So I have next week off, and we have 2 more weeks after that. And then that's done.
You're so close.
Yeah. Maggie, how did you kill the game?
So I actually killed the game this weekend in my nightlife. I went out with a couple friends over the weekend to a welcoming committee event. The welcoming committee is in a couple cities across the U.S., and they basically they do queer events, like just kind of come one, come all events. But they often will take over traditionally straight spaces and straight bars and kind of do like a, what they'll call like a guerrilla queer takeover. And I've been to a couple of these types of events before, specifically like Dyke Night themed ones. And candidly, I haven't loved them, but I went to a guerrilla queer bar takeover in Fenway at this like totally fratty sports bar. And I had so much fun. I was getting it. I really was feeling myself a lot. I was getting down. I was doing some wild moves that I have not done in a real minute. And it just felt so good. And I was sweaty and disgusting when I came home. And that I feel like is the way it's supposed to be.
Yes.
I met some very nice people who were a hoot. And I went with some nice people who I went with a friend who I know pretty well, and then some people that I don't know at all,
new
which
friends.
Also rock. So I was just feeling like I went out of my comfort zone, which is nice.
Yes.
I also like did like half of my homework for my online class this week today, which is feeling pretty good. So that's like in terms of like serious work that needed to be done, I'm glad I did that. But going out, I feel like was a better success.
Yeah. You killed it. You left it bleeding out on the dance floor.
Sorry, everyone.
Also, speaking about the welcome committee event, we want to start doing a segment called Queer Cal, where we talk about upcoming queer events. We're probably going to stay pretty local to New England. Mm-hmm. We're both pretty familiar with Boston and Western Mass queer scenes. But
yes.
So stay tuned for that. We'll be letting you guys know when we hear about things and trying to talk about more talks at universities and things like that in the
area. And other things that you can hit up. But we also bring it up so that if you have an event that's coming up that you either know about or that you're hosting yourself, please, please let us know. Hit us up on social media and we will put it out there.
We will share it with our other audience members.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So thank you guys for tuning in this episode. Next week, we're going to be talking about Chosen Family, which me and I are so excited about. We're going to be talking about the ways that we show love for that chosen family, the ways that we build queer community together, and even our chosen family members who aren't queer.
Some love for the straighties.
There it is. So we're very, very excited about it. If you have anything you want to say about butch femme identifiers or things you want to drop in our ears about your chosen family before we go live, definitely, definitely hit us up.
Yes.
All and right. Subscribe on iTunes, rate, review, comment.
Yes.
Leave all of your thoughts, only nice ones.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.